Thank you very much, Dr. Min. We will open the floor now to questions. So we'll start with Nick at the back there.
Hi, Nick Burton, Canadian Taxpayers Federation. I'm wondering if you've had
much of a chance to study how, when in countries where this has been implemented, how it's worked, not just on the fiscal side, but also behavior entering the workforce and the tax base overall.
Well, no one has done our proposal, like the specific one, which allows for both income splitting and this twist on the personal exemption, which I think deals with a lot of studies that have been focused on just family taxation as a whole. The most important work I find is due to Richard Blundell in the United Kingdom, who examines the impact of the tax system on families and the incentive to work. In his work, which was highly influential in the Murley's report in the United Kingdom 2 years ago, in his work he had recommended that, he had found that where the tax system has a particularly strong impact on incentives to work are two stages in a person's life. One is at the retirement stage, and the other one is at the point where children go back to school. And this is what's called the extensive margin in terms of how taxes impact on decision making, and that's what I think is very attractive about our proposal with respect to the personal exemption, because that actually gives a lot of incentive for people. If a secondary worker in a family decides to go to work, that will give them the kind of incentive to actually do that without taking away the impact of income splitting that might have on work effort. And so that's why I think there's a lot to the proposal that we have. But has it been tested? No, not this particular proposal, and I think one would need to maybe do more analysis of it. I don't know, Matt, if you want to add anything more? Okay.
I should mention that if you're sitting at the back, there are microphones at either side of the room, so feel free to ask questions as well. Diane, sorry.
And that's been accomplished in Quebec. And what happens in Quebec with parents of either the mother who stays with the child, they get nothing to, very little to cover the expenses of childcare at home. Whereas with a dual income family, with the universal daycare available, out of the public purse, about $10,000 a year goes to each child if they put their child in the universal daycare. So that's $10,000 for the value of care from the public purse for the dual income family versus a very little, unless you're very low income, to the single income family. Now, have you considered that at all in your calculations in adjusting the taxes for the different types of families?
We did include child care expenses and an analysis of it, not specific to the Quebec universal daycare system. I just want to make the point, though, that in one of the things we would argue is that whatever the tax, I'm a great believer when it comes to neutrality in a tax system. I think some people around this table know that very well from everything I say about business taxation and personal taxation, everything else. That I think that it's very important to have neutrality in the sense of letting people make their decisions based on economic reasons and not having the tax system intervene with that. So we did certainly take into account child care expenses. I'm going to let Matt discuss it in more detail. But the main point is that what we're suggesting here does actually achieve that neutrality in that it'll be up to people to make those decisions. Specific circumstances like bringing in the Quebec Universal Child Tax Credit Program, we have not analyzed itself. Matt, do you want to say anything more about child care expenses?
So child care expenses, we try to include them in our tax calculations and the fact that dual-earner couples are going to spend more money paying for child care, and that comes as a deduction, which makes basically their child care costs are tax deductible or they don't pay tax on it. Whereas single earner families, they have their child care at home, so they're not making the money, so it's not taxed either. So it's neutral in that sense. So saying that they get $10,000, I don't think it was entirely accurate. They don't get the money directly, it's just tax deductible. Or they don't, they still have to spend the money, whereas the single earner family makes the money at home. It costs both ways. Like if you're going to take care of your child at home, you're going to give up doing certain other household work.
Or going out and work.
Okay. Thank you. Sir, you had a question.
I'm Chung San Leong. I'm a member of Parliament for Willowdale. I wonder whether you've studied the impact of, number one, marriage equivalent, and number two, the impact of family income reporting on the total national tax revenue collection. What the difference is in terms of our current system versus if everybody decided to go marriage equivalent or marriage, in the marriage, family income.
I just want to make sure I understand. So there is currently the marriage to equivalent deduction, and that is, you're asking about the revenue cost with that? Or
I'm looking at whether you studied the impact on how much less tax the federal treasury will get if everybody decides to, you know, if we go to a total family income situation.
Right. So the current estimates are roughly $2.5 billion for income splitting at $50,000. That includes both an estimate that came up from the conservatives themselves, but also an estimate that was done, maybe slightly higher number, if I recall, Matt, $2.7 billion by a paper that came up from the C.D. Howe Institute. This particular proposal, which we, because of the limitation on the transferability of the personal exemption, will actually reduce the overall cost of the income splitting proposal, even at $50,000. We actually have the ability to run the numbers, but we didn't have enough time, or at least more work. Let me put it this way, there's a lot more work that needs to be done in terms of coding in order for us to do that. But we hope to have an actual answer to that question in the near future. I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
I have a question, and feel free to come up to the mics at the back. I've wondered, you've spoken the entire time in terms of tax equity, and yet the perception amongst people who don't support this often is that this is actually a form of social engineering and therefore not equitable, forcing people into a particular mode of life that they may not agree with. I wonder how you refute that charge.
Goes back to the definition of neutrality. I mean, a neutral tax system is one in which you have similar tax burdens on different types of activities or different types of choices, and that if you have a similar tax burden that applies to all types of activities, then the tax system is not interfering with decisions at all. And so what this recommendation does, in my view, is actually move the tax system to interfering less with decisions made by individuals. Those people that want to work and have their children in child care can make that decision without being influenced by the tax system. Those who wish to have one of the parents, whether it's these days it's a father or a mother, or even in other families it could be other things, but they would have that opportunity to make that decision without being influenced by the tax system. So I never quite understand this argument, because really this is why you have to do these kinds of calculations, as we've done, where you take into account untaxed income at home as part of the overall assessment of what is the overall burden of the income tax structure. And what we're showing is that income splitting, with this twist with respect to the transferability of the equivalent to spouse deduction, or equivalent to married deduction, would actually achieve equal treatment of families with the same, who are raising children. So at least with that decision, the tax system will not interfere with the current as it currently does.
Okay, thank you. Yes.
There seems to be the impression out there that with these types of proposals, they're only useful for families where one parent doesn't work at all. How do we overcome that perception?
Sorry?
There seems to be an impression out there that, proposals like this are only useful for families where one parent doesn't work at all. Is there a way to overcome that impression, or?
Well, I mean, the way of doing it is we've got to start where we're at right now. Right now we have a tax system that can discriminate against single-earner families. So it forces them to, if a parent would like to stay home, may not be able to do it because they can't afford doing it. And so first of all, you have to start from where you are in the first place. And so what we're suggesting in what we've done is that both the income splitting proposal plus this twist that we have in the proposal would actually achieve equal treatment of at least these two in these two cases of people who are raising children and can at least make a decision based on on their own reasons as opposed to being influenced by the tax system.
Hi. When I was listening to you, I wanted to ask why you wouldn't just advocate for a flat tax system, because it seems to me that we would deal with the equity issue. But I heard you speak and just a moment ago talk about how we would account for non-taxable work done at home by the stay-at-home parent. And so is that why you're not advocating for the flat tax system? And if so, how would we quantify or determine what that's worth?
Well, first of all, going to a flat tax system is a big change and has other implications than simply the one that we're looking at. And I agree the presumption here is that we would have a progressive tax system. And given that's the case right now, that's true. Obviously, if you went to a flat tax, you reduce the need for this kind of system, although you have to always remember that even under a flat tax, there's two rates. There's zero and whatever the other rate is. And so there are things that you still have to think about at the lowest income levels. And then if you have clawbacks or on income-tested benefits, then you have all sorts of new marginal tax rates that you have to talk about. But we basically took the system as it is, looking at one particular provision and saying, yes, this provision would actually do something positive. And we would argue that, at least from a tax policy perspective, that change would have a positive impact. Does this preclude maybe major changes, like a major reform where you do something differently? That's another question that one has to evaluate and has to think about.
Sorry, and so in that point, how do we, how does the government then determine what, a gardener is worth? I'm just, what the stay-at-home parent would be do, what those tasks are worth in terms of the tax scheme?
Well, we base this on Statistics Canada studies about trying to measure what that implicit income, and I'll be honest, they're not perfect, right? And, knowing that is not, it's a survey that's done, and you there's all sorts of different individual circumstances. But all I'm saying is that on average, this is a proposal that I think would achieve a lot of equity between two types of families, single-earner families and two dual-earner families. And I think you can just take it in terms of that narrow prism of looking at the issue.
Yes, go ahead, sir.
Thank you. In your overview, you talked about four or five countries that have incorporated family taxation, and then a little later on, you talked about Canada having started sort of a process where you listed about six different sort of initiatives. Do the countries that you mentioned, would those be inclusive or in their corporate tax or their family tax plan, or are they separate? And how do we, in consideration of that, and then trying to be, if you wanted to be comparable in fairness to other competing nations with Canada, are any of those six or are they all inclusive in the family tax plans of other countries?
If I understand you correctly, I mean, the proposal to allow for some income splitting is, I would say, a partial proposal to family taxation. It's not the full, it's not a complete way of going to family taxation. As I mentioned, it's the case of France. France has the most comprehensive approach that I know of. U.S. joint filing is also one of the more comprehensive approaches, not quite the same as France, but we're as comprehensive as France, but certainly U.S. has that system available right now. And so the way the U.S. system operates is that, if I recall the numbers, for example, the top rate will hit $250,000 in for individual income, but then over $400,000 for joint income. So you have a, you know, so people have to calculate what they have to do. This is a, what I would say, a fairly modest approach to family taxation. And it could be sensible from the point of view of the tax cost, you know, the revenue cost associated with it. If one goes to full family taxation, that's a major change in the tax system. You have to really rethink a lot of laws and everything else at the same time. Plus, you would probably have very significant revenue changes, and I'm not quite sure what that would mean. This one you can contain. In fact, you could always decide not to do 50,000, do a smaller number or do a bigger number. And in fact, you can stage it in over time if one wanted to introduce it without having as much impact at the beginning. So you start off by allowing 10,000 the first year and 20,000 the next year to be split and that sort of thing. So I think those kinds of issues, the one good thing about this is I would say it's manageable in the sense that you can introduce it. You could contain the revenue cost associated with it and still achieve something which was the objective of the proposal in the first place, which is to try to achieve some equality between single earner and dual earner families.
Thank you.
We'll take it the back corner there.
I appreciate all these questions about the short term, but I'm thinking more long term. If both parents are working, the birth rate plummets. But when the woman stays at home, even for 5 or 6 years, the birth rate climbs. If women stay home and have 3 or 6 children, when those children hit the workforce 20 or 30 years later, that's going to have a big increase in the number of people paying taxes and in the tax revenue coming in. Is there something wrong in my argument, or what do you think?
It's an interesting question. It's one, and maybe Matt's seen some studies, and I'm just not sure empirically whether it's true. And so one would have to understand that. There has been, I remember reading work over the earlier years about how taxes can impact on family formation and other policies. For example, Kevin Milligan, who was a PhD student of mine and now working at University of British Columbia, did a very interesting study on the Quebec program, which gave a very large lump sum amount of money to those who had more than 2 children. And what he found, and it was this is part of a thesis actually, it was extremely well done. He did a very careful job, but he actually found that it did have a significant impact on family formation, and that was in the case of this Quebec Baby Star program that did that. Previous studies did not find that effect, but they didn't do it as well as Kevin, and he actually published it in one of the top journals. But I think it just shows you the need for more empirical work to understand how these tax issues can influence family formation, the number of children that are held. But in this case, I don't think we have tons of evidence available to understand that. I don't know, Matt, if you saw anything else.
I don't know any other results, but I don't think children are expensive, so I don't think the tax savings that you can see from shifting from one of these tax systems to joint taxation and this difference in parents staying at home or not isn't going to result in them choosing to go from 1 to kid to having 5. They might have to choose to have another kid, or they might choose to have 1, but I don't think it's going to be huge.
We'll go with Pierre, and then Gregory, and then Joan.
Thanks very much for your excellent piece of work here. I think it's very important. I was the one who did the original draft of the conservative income splitting package for our election platform. And there's still some knowledge I'd like to build on, though. I think you might be able to help. One, my experience is, and Statistics Canada data seems to suggest, that over the next generation, the number of households with a female breadwinner and a male homemaker is going to grow, and that we've already seen a transition towards that. we can look at the data showing increased female participation in university programs, et cetera, to suggest that this will happen. I see it anecdotally in my community. It's becoming, I'm seeing more and more male homemakers. So I'm wondering if you have any data on that. My second question is, we hear a lot of daycare advocates talk about the need for creating more daycare spaces. What about freeing up more daycare spaces? The public opinion data that has been done on parental preferences for childcare options demonstrates that overwhelmingly a stay-at-home parent is the favored option if money is not an issue. And there's not even a close second option. It's by far the most popular. If a policy like this were able to, were to happen and it were to allow people to make the choice that public opinion data shows they want to make, I would presume you'd be moving some families out of daycare spaces that would free up spaces for folks who actually want them. I'm wondering if you have any data to support or contradict either of those two points of speculation I've offered.
So on the first issue, I haven't been that close to the data unless Matt's seen it, but I have read some various pieces, especially in the U.S., where there have been numbers quoted exactly what you're saying about the increased number of stay-at-home parents being actually male, not female. I mean, that certainly has been a trend happening in the United States. I presume it's the same thing happening to a certain degree here in Canada, but I will admit I'm not close to the data, at least in the Canadian context, but I'm sure that's something that we could check with, and in fact, maybe we'll get back to you on that. I can talk to Matt about whether we can, we have that kind of information available. At least I think we could get at in terms of these statistics kind of studies. With respect to the second point, I think we would have to do some empirical work to see to what extent changes in the overall tax load would actually impact on the incentive. In other words, if you carried out this proposal, how much it would actually impact on people making decisions to stay at home rather than working. I do know that from the numbers we've done, we would achieve pretty close to equality, and so we think that's pretty good. But how much that actually translates into people making decisions where some will stay at home as opposed to at least one of the parents, as opposed to both working, or even changing from full-time to part-time work. That could be another possibility. At least that's something that I think would need to be investigated. But it's the problem is that you need to have enough evidence to kind of test those sort of things and changes in the tax system over time to properly test that. So anyway, it's an interesting question to ask, but I'm afraid that I don't have a lot to answer. I don't know if you have anything to add.
No, not between literally stay-at-home fathers, but I haven't seen it over time, but there's definitely been a growth in the number of couples where the secondary earner, the earner that makes less money, is the male. And so I've seen numbers for that, not numbers from a lot, whether or not there's a large number of families where the male is strictly staying at home.
Thank you. We'll take two more questions, Gregory, and then we'll end with yours. And unless there's a pressing need, does anybody? Okay, we'll do it that way then. Thanks.
Thank you, Dr. Mintz and Mr. Kripkowski. This is a valuable contribution to the public policy knowledge base, and we're grateful to the University of Calgary School of Public Policy for doing this important work. There's been a lot of shifting of the goalposts, but the formal commitment undertaken by the Prime Minister of Canada in the 20 election campaign was to balance the budget of the Government of Canada in the 2014-15 fiscal year and to subsequently introduce income splitting for families. So this is a formal commitment that the Prime Minister made in the 2011 campaign, where he was granted a mandate. So we take that commitment very seriously at the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. You mentioned there's a $2.5 billion ticket price tag on honoring this commitment. So much of the work you've done relates to tax policy neutrality. And one question we had you refer to the $7,000 of child care deductions that are available to families who pay for child care outside the home. My question is, what if, what would the effect be? What would it cost the government, and how would it impact tax neutrality if a high-earning spouse could pay a low-earning spouse the $7,000 and get that deduction? And what would it cost?
Well, I think, isn't income splitting really that? I mean, you're saying, okay, I'm going to take $50,000 of my income and I'm going to give it to somebody else, or at least allocate it to my spouse and for tax purposes, and the spouse will pay the tax on it, as opposed to the individual. So it's like giving a deduction for one versus income inclusion for the other. So I think, obviously, if it's just $7,000 instead of $50,000, you'll be talking about a much smaller number in terms of revenue cost.
My only thing to add on that is that child care deduction for daycare is $7,000, but the average amount that's actually used is far lower than that. So low-income couples are not using that $7,000. High-income couples where a parent staying as a home is not using that $7,000. And couples in between, I mean, the average utilization of that is about half or less of the $7,000. Not very many families are using that massive amount of money. So I think a situation like this is going to be more accessible to more families.
We'll take one last question.
Yeah, in your paper, Dr. Mintz and Matt, you say that your policy twist is a way to compensate dual earner families for the lack of implicit household income. Could it not be argued that the twist is a way, then, in effect, of taxing implicit household income?
That's exactly what it does implicitly. It does that implicitly. So we kind of call it kind of like an employment tax credit, then, the equivalent to marriage deduction in that case, because at least in the case of income, when there's income splitting, because what happens is that in order to use it, then somebody would have to go out and do some work to use it. So, but another way of thinking of that is it's kind of an implicit tax on household production, and that's a way of thinking about it.
That will conclude our event here today. I'd like to thank each and every one of you for coming and spending time. We would like to thank Dr. Mintz, of course, for taking time to discuss tax policy with us here today. As he mentioned, that we have been working and on this topic at least since 2008. We have advocated for family income splitting as a benefit for families. The Institute of Marriage and Family Canada is a nonpartisan research think tank. We'll continue to look at all these options, and we're always interested in discussing and debating the various issues. Family income splitting, we're very grateful for Dr. Jack Mintz lending his expertise to this topic and really putting meat on the bones to a proposal that we wish, quite frankly, that every party here on the Hill would adopt. So thank you very much for your time. We thank our co-hosts. Mr. McKay had to leave already, unfortunately, but Stella Ambler, we thank you so much for co-hosting this event here today. And to each one of you, we thank you for coming and learning with us. So thanks very much. Have a good day.